certain times you embrace needing a coach, even with the best AI-generated program and everything else. Technology is definitely helpful so that you can actually track the metrics and have better ways of providing the coaching. It's symbiotic, but it's also not binary. We factor movement, nutrition, and regeneration. So most people take advantage of movement, but to get your best outcomes, you also need to be cognizant of your nutrition and regeneration so that your body is in the best position to be able to take advantage of the work.
What is your focus for the future?
Taking what we've done in the space of movement and transcending to beyond movement. We have expertise in other areas, but we do not actually have as many services in those areas. I think that would be something that in the next 5 years, we would definitely have more offerings.
Iswar, it's fantastic to see you again. I wanted to have this discussion for a long time. I think in Equinox has been one of the, if not the most well-known brand in terms of exercising and fitness in general. And I would love to hear maybe your story, how you were started. Why don't we start maybe by your role and what are you doing currently? And then we can jump into the timeline. How did you start? When did you join?
Great to be here and good to chat with you. Currently, I serve as the Chief Technology Officer for Equinox Fitness Clubs. In that role, I lead product engineering, data, and operations for our best known and biggest brand within the Equinox Group. Equinox Group also has SoulCycle, Blink, and Equinox Hotels.
Awesome.
So, yeah. So happy to, you know, kind of like rewind almost 14 years ago if you want me to start there.
That would be awesome. I think the journey of how I believe you spent a lot of years in Equinox. The journey, how did you start? What was your first role in the company?
Definitely. I'll just do 2 minutes of background because that'll help you understand the challenges and why I look forward to the role. My background is primarily in electrical engineering, and I worked in semiconductors for 11 years. So working for West Coast VLSI companies and so on. So definitely the role of Equinox was not what I studied for or I trained for. But having moved to East Coast, I started liking more the digital type of roles versus what I was doing with semiconductors. And for 6 months, I had worked at JetBlue to get my basic understanding of product, creating customer experiences, and the general world of product management. And in June 2010, Equinox was starting a small, yet-to-be-named brand called Blink. And as part of starting that brand, they wanted to build, for the first time, e-commerce experiences around selling memberships. Till then, the memberships can only be bought with advisors in a club. And they wanted to actually create that experience of buying memberships on the website. And they were looking for someone to come in to help them do that. So I was extremely fortunate with having not that much experience in this particular area for me to have landed, you know that role. And then within 3 months, I was actually given an opportunity to build a team. I was the only digital product director at that particular point, and I hired the first UX research and designer, the first analytics person to help us with Adobe measurements, and three product managers to help on, you know, kind of like building stuff. So I would say that for the first 2 years, I almost learned more from the people who were working for me than anything else, right? Because these were fantastic people that I'm still in touch with, all of them. They're no longer at Equinox, but they're in good leadership roles in New York City, and I chat with them. But I learned the general kind of concept of, that is when we introduced Jira in our company to talk about how do you do sprint planning and how do you do story points, how do you run an agile process, and a stand-up should be 10 minutes and not 1 hour, all these principles. And then the concept of leading and lagging metrics when you're measuring with Adobe, understanding how do you do A-B tests, and, you know, not removing our point of view, but definitely kind of making sure that the consumer's point of view is included when you're doing product development, to understand, you know, what are the jobs that they need to be done? How do we validate it? how do we make sure that the solutions we are developing actually satisfy their constraints? And then more functionally, when you create a workflow, how do we do that? How do we validate functional validation of those designs, right? These are early concepts that I picked up. And also it helped with the team and the company coming to understand what product management was, right? Because if you go to a traditional brick and mortar company, Equinox is not a technology company. At that particular point, our department itself was considered IT, not technology as it is today. And information technology, most times, people just executed on projects that other business units gave them. And that's fundamentally different than product management, which is we align on what the problem is, and the product managers are the ones who actually devise the solutions versus being given a set of requirements and a set of objectives and are being told, now go construct this building exactly according to this spec, right? So that was the really interesting and intriguing aspect of the first 5 years, was to help transform the company to be able to understand what product management means and how we change the department from information technology to technology to be able to kind of like tell, we're not just here to serve your IT needs, but we are here to help the business achieve its goals. We're here to help the growth, and we are here to help consumers have delightful experiences through the means of technology. So that's, you know, kind of, again, I'll pause just in case you have questions and so on, because I can tell the story for another 8 years, but that the earlier part of it, because it goes into, it's almost like, you know, I can say that's when I was leading product. And then what happened when I got engineering? What happened when I got data? And then what happened when I got the full thing? So we can divide this story into four chapters. But the first, you know, kind of like, you know, chapter is really around me building up the product function at Equinox.
Yeah, that's incredible. I think we should do that. We should break this into these four chapters and speak about it more. I think one of the questions I had was, when you joined Equinox, how early was it for the company? How many people were you? And also for these first 5 years that you mentioned, how did you see the evolution? Did you get more people over time and so on?
Yeah. So when I joined, you know, we had one engineer. We had about 50 clubs, one engineer within my department. The entire website was running on his Mac. And when he needed to deploy, he would ask me to look over his computer and tell, does it look good? I was his tester. And I said, yeah, I think it looks good. He would press some save button and our website would be updated, right? We had not heard of a deployment process or DevOps or platform engineering. Cloud wasn't there yet. These were physical servers. So it's like, I don't think I've even thought about it for many years. So good for, you know, asking me that particular question. And then as the needs arose, I think, you know, kind of like by the end of 3-4 years, we probably had, even now, our entire team is only 80 people. So it's not like a large organization, right? At that particular point, maybe we had 30 in the entire technology team. So we grew to maybe another 10 engineers. So it was not one of these stories where, like a startup, where it goes through like explosive number of engineers, right? I think we're always being like a slow and steady type of structure. And it was always more need-based, saying that, hey, you know, kind of like, do we need people? That is also the same time that where we actually started our first offshore team augmentation during that phase. So I think that was extremely helpful to be able to take advantage of additional staff members, you know, kind of in a more economic situation with staffing in India during that time.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. When it comes to the athlete experience in these five first years, you mentioned 50 destinations. And what was the focus of Equinox in these days? And did it ever change from what it is today?
The core principles, you know, are still the same, which is, you know, kind of like you want to acquire our members, retain them, and, you know, kind of like grow revenue through greater revenue per member, right? Those goals haven't fundamentally changed. But if I were to put a little bit of the technology hat to answer this question, I'll definitely remove the hat to answer it too. Definitely the first phase included a lot of, I call it digitization, right? Like, you know, it's kind of like we have something that is being done by humans. Can we automate it? We have some process that is leaking. Can we make it better? How do we increase efficiencies? How do we increase throughput, right? So it did not affect the customer experiences as much, but it definitely kind of affected our staff, where the manual tasks that they were doing were digitized. So I'll give you a good example. In personal training, the appointments used to be written in notebooks. And when someone finished a personal training, someone had to go to a computer and tell, can you remove, you know, from John one session so that someone else, basically a trainer, you know, kind of gets paid. So that was an interesting project of digitizing it and doing it. Towards the end of that phase is where I call our digital transformation kind of coming in, right? Where we went to Salesforce, we went to Amazon, we switched our ERP systems, we broke away from, we used to have Microsoft or, you know, kind of like enterprise service bus, where deployments used to take sometimes 6 to 9 hours. We went to a microservice architecture so that we would not have these monolithic systems that would make speed slower and so on. So it was an interesting thing. As far as the company was going, you know, kind of like the concept of delighting customers was something that our CEO always had, but it was through more of the physical touch points, right? Like we had the Kiehl's shampoos and conditioners. Then we had cold eucalyptus towels. But during that first chapter, we also started introducing digital TV screens so that, you know, the clubs could actually display some of the information. We changed the way people could book classes so that people can book a particular bike. How do you, because otherwise people were coming into the clubs not knowing whether they had a spot in the class or not, or, you know, kind of like people were rushing, which is not a good experience for a brand like ours. We want to make sure that people comfortably enter the space and their expectations are met. So that was the focus. I had just started to kind of like think of how do you use technology to actually increase the value that our members are getting out of our clubs versus relying only on physical kind of, you know, experiences.
I think that's going to be a very interesting segue into the product. From what I've seen in Equinox, you have some of the best technology out there, and a lot of gyms can learn a lot from what you have built. What's the experience of a user today when they go through the gym facing technology in terms of maybe the app? And I've noticed, like, last time I went there, very easy to go in. You don't need to scan anything. There is some sort of, I don't know, RFID or NFC picking things up. And you go inside of the club and, like, technology is everywhere. So let's break this down a bit. What's, from the user experience, how does the athlete today experience technology in the gym?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So, like, if you were to take the snapshot of March 2024 today, right, and then said, what does an Equinox member experience as they're kind of going into the club and, you know, which is powered by technology? I can break it into three phases, because one is the planning phase, right? Like I said, the planning phase is where you're trying to kind of discover what is available tomorrow. So imagine you're trying to go to the club tomorrow. The app actually has a context to understand that perhaps your frequency is every 2 days. So it knows that you're most likely going to go to the club Saturday, right? And today being Friday, so it actually tells, hey, here are some of the classes that are happening today. Here are some of your favorites, but also based on your goals, here is something that you might want to try. So we're trying to think of in the planning phase in two different aspects. One is, if you're someone who knows who wants it, how do we make it very, very, very easy for you to be able to just tap a button and book? But also, we want to be able to suggest something that you might not have previously tried, but we think you will like based on either collaborative filters in our machine models or based on like some of our experts who said that your goal of X and Y means that you should be doing this. Or you might not be aware that perhaps tomorrow there's a special class and you know that's what you should be doing, right? So we're trying to break them down into, we call it your go-to list, and then you might also like in the planning phase. So once the planning phase is over and the member comes into our club, you're right, we have technology where we just use the iPad at the front desk that detects that you're close, you know, within like a certain feet of it. And when you say check in, it allows the employee at the front desk to know that you're in good standing and your app turns green. You can just show it and walk away without having to stand in long lines. And there is no choke point, right? Otherwise, previously, like 5 years ago, with a scanner, that's a choke point because everybody has to bring their phone, come to the scanner, and it creates a little bit. And we know that, especially our members, time is very precious. So we want to make sure that, you know, they're not wasting time on standing in a line. And something new that we introduced about a couple of months ago, it's still only in a few clubs, is called a club mode. In a club mode, essentially, now your app knows that you're inside the club and it changes the features that are available to help you get the best out of what you need when you're in the club. So the planning mode, then the club mode, right? In club mode, we allow you, it's like previously we used to, for new members, they had to like use a Wi-Fi password to be able to connect to our club Wi-Fi. But now we've actually integrated the app to the Wi-Fi so that if you're logged into the app, you're automatically connected to our club Wi-Fi. And that allows you being connected to the club Wi-Fi, if you were to take a class where an instructor is speaking into a microphone, you can actually use your Bluetooth headphones, which are connected to your phone, to listen to the audio through the app. Or if you are running in front of a bunch of TVs and you want to listen to the football game on TV 11, that is also something that you can access through the app to be able to, you know, listen to the audio through the club mode. The club mode also allows you to like see services that are available at the club at that particular point. And in the future, we want to have an ability where you can request assistance from a floor coach who can come and help you. So imagine that you are in front of like an equipment, you either needed help for spotting or you wanted to just understand how best to use it. Obviously, you can look up a QR code and see a video, but we feel that, you know, a human being who can actually come to you and help you is better. And that's something that you can request assistance and through like, you know, kind of standard positioning, they would know who you are, where you are, and to be able to kind of come and help you. So, and we have another three or four great ideas in terms of how during the time you're in the club, and there's like a good roadmap for doing that. The third construct of that is once you're done with the checkout, you know, like we are done with your workout, you're done with your shower. If you wanted to order some food or a juice, that's going to be available for you, waiting for you, or, you know, as you're leaving. But then once you're outside the club, we want to recognize your achievements, right? Like, so if you take a cycling class, we might tell you, you rode 4 miles today at a pace of, you know, kind of like 14 miles per hour. It's your best speed this week. Overall, you rode these many miles, just giving you some breakdown if you choose to tell in your demographic, you're doing this way, great job, and just helping you motivate, but also asking, you know, kind of like, how do you feel? And if you say that you feel tired, we can provide some nutritional guidance or any kind of guidance on the best stretch to be able to make sure that you're recovering well, because we factor in all three categories, movement, nutrition, and regeneration. So most people take advantage of movement, but to get your best outcomes, you also need to be cognizant of your nutrition and regeneration there. What do you eat? How do you sleep? How do you stretch so that your body is in the best position to be able to, take advantage of the workouts. So that is the post-club is, the third mode. And then that cycle repeats, right? So we break the product and user experiences into these three sectors to be able to kind of like help them plan, help them have the best experience in the club, and after the club, congratulate, motivate them so that they're ready for kind of like repeating that cycle.
So basically the real seamless experience between the user and their exercising and during and after and before the workouts. That's incredible. I don't see I've seen any company in the world being as close to this.
Yeah, I think just one other thing that I forgot to add is, like, I think, in the clubs right now on some treadmills and by end of the year on most treadmills and eventually on all cardio equipment, you would actually be able to take custom Equinox content. So it's our applications running on, now the computers in the treadmills have become good enough where they can support kind of like, high-end graphics, controls. And so we've enabled a very seamless login where you just open your camera and the equipment has a QR code. You just take a picture. It immediately logs you in to the treadmill. So if you didn't want to do anything else, you'll just get your data saying how many miles, what incline and stuff. But if you wanted to, you can actually take specific interval training classes that are meant for your goal, right? Like, so someone's goal could be losing weight, someone's goal could be toning up. So with the cardio equipment, definitely we've made good strides to provide Equinox specific content to help our members with their goals and also data tracking so that people can generally understand the progress that they've made in that. So that's also something that happens within the clubs through the advent of technology.
I think that's a very good segue into data. I've been, my problem all those years, I was going to gyms around the world, but all of the equipment there cannot really, they were some sort of measuring the information, displaying the information, but it was pretty impossible to access the data from the cardio equipment, for example. It sounds that you're doing something very significant here. Maybe in conjunction with, you mentioned like in your journey, you had a lot to do with data as well. Maybe how did your role evolve into the data side of things? And also, what's your view about data and understanding the data of each user and how does it happen today?
Yeah. So I'll start with, kind of like my view on data, right? Because as, chapter two was just quickly, kind of like engineering, which to me is very coupled with the product side of things and like how do you create the best engineering experiences to do what we do and, mostly advances in platform engineering and just kind of like React going to Node, more modern technology stacks and so on. Data was something that while engineering, I felt like I improved us and like we all worked towards it. It's not just me, to the standards that people had with data as I took that on in maybe 2018, I felt that my view on data was fundamentally different or more different than other people in the sense that as a technology data leader, I did not view us as a steward of data to help other business units make sense of the data and carry that in a briefcase and give to them as much as, of course, do that, but also take advantage of the data to create data products and data experiences that directly impact consumers, right? So that goes to the question that you asked of, kind of like we have, every time you take studio cycling, your bikes have data that we can capture through WASP receivers and store locally on computers. And so that you can either show the users as they're riding or at the end of the class have the cumulative data. And we made a decision very early on that we would have like the large time series data that basically captures three metrics every single second, right? Like, so in a 45 minute class, you can imagine, for about 20,000-30,000 people taking cycling classes and for the last 8 years, how much data that is. But that's, we made a very early decision in terms of you know, kind of like having more data is helpful for us to be able to give the nuances to users to be able to tell, look, in last month, you know, like this changed or this is what is happening. But it also allows us to create experiences around cycling milestones. Here was today's class, you finished your 1,000th mile at Equinox, right? And then relaying that to the instructor who's teaching the class at that time to be able to tell, look, you know, here is Sally who finished 1,000 miles. And the instructor celebrates Sally in the class to say, great job, Sally, to do that. And that is extremely important for many of us, you know, where we not only feel the pride of achievements, but where that achievement is recognized by other people in a social setting that validates, you know, kind of like why you work so hard and you sweat so hard to do these things time in and time out, right? So our data journey started with cycling. And like I was mentioning before, it definitely kind of like continued into cardio, where now we feel confident that by end of this year or something like that, where 80% of the cardio equipment, we would be able to get the data back. And that data definitely helps us. We are very transparent in telling our members, saying, hey, here is what you did, right? And based on what you did, here is something that we suggest that you do. So they understand that it's not, we're just not capturing data for our sake, but we're really capturing data so that it helps them to be able to achieve their goals through using experiences there. Even when you take a class, you know, you can generally tell how hard you took the class. And for every single class, we actually have something called the metabolic equivalent that tells us how hard the class is. And because we know the equipment that's being used, and is it a high intensity class? Is it a low intensity class? So we can approximately calculate, you know, kind of like what calories they might have expended. Obviously, with the variables, that can get better. But even without variables, we'll have some approximation of, you know, how many calories a yoga class might have done compared to a circuit Metcon 3 class as an example, right? So classes are covered, cardio is covered, and then comes the gray area, which is around like strength, right? Like, so how do you track strength, which is more challenging because you have smaller pieces of equipment like dumbbells and kettlebells and, you know, so on. But what we've done there is we've created a very, you know, it's cool, and that's just kind of like my perception of it, a coaching product where our trainers, and, you know, we call them coaches, actually program 4 weeks at a time for their clients. We believe in this cycle system where, you know, you do something for 4 weeks, then you adjust, and then you again start 4 weeks. And during those 4 weeks, if you're active for 3 days, you're inactive for 4 days, it helps. The repetition is something that's key to kind of coaching, right? Like, so during, on a Monday, if you're doing kettlebells, next Monday you'll do kettlebells, next Monday you'll do kettlebells. One day you're doing 30 kg, next day you're doing 35, and you're improving. You're not switching it up every single time, but there's a method to the coaching. So this product is actually built, and we give full transparency to both the member and the coach. And the coach tracks what you're doing when you're working out. So when you're working out, and that day, if in your second set, if you went to 40 instead of 30, that's tracked. So that the next time you start, you know, they have the things, let's start with the base itself as 40. But it also helps our clients where we tell, look, here is what you've done in the last 3 months. In the last 3 months, you've gone from like a deadlift of X to Y. You've gone from a kettlebell of X to Y. Your farmer's carry improved. We also want to get to the place where we can track your posture and form to be able to provide that feedback, because that's as critical, right? Sometimes you might not have improved in your weight, but if you're rounding your back less, that's equally important for your long-term health in terms of, you know, building muscle strength and so on. So that's how we're thinking about data in the strength area. And obviously, if you capture these things and then you have cumulative data, then it helps us to show progress to users or to be able to tell, here is a recommendation because you seem to be doing well in these three dimensions, but in the fourth dimension, you're not doing well. So here is our suggestion for it. But also to create cool experiences around milestones and challenges to be able to kind of like put people in a group to say who will do best. So those are all the data products that essentially, you know, kind of like use data as the core component, but have the consumer as the end user to consume, you know, kind of like those experiences.
Ishwar, I think there is something else that is very important too, and I'd love to hear your take on it. When it comes to reaching one's goals, one of the very important things is what they do outside of the gym as well. So for example, what kind of meals are they having, and are they achieving the correct ratio of their calories and macronutrients and so on? And then also, what about sleep? What about their daily life? Is there something that you are working on there, and what's your take on it?
Yeah, I think it's a, you know, if you think of an average member spending about like an hour and a half in our club, right? You know, we always say that's 22 and a half hours that we don't know what they're doing. So as a percentage basis, you know, kind of it's somewhere around 6% or something that we know, and most that we don't know. So we've always had our like wearable strategy as how do we go about it? We know that many of them use Apple Watch. Some of them use Oura. Some of them use, you know, kind of like other platforms, and building integrations with each of them does not make sense because, you know, the opportunity cost of doing that means that we won't do a bunch of other things. So I think, you know, it should come as no surprise to you that we have, you know, kind of been talking with your firm to kind of understand how do we take advantage of this component of data that we don't currently have our hands on, right? Because if I know that you had bad sleep, I can immediately recommend a low intensity workout instead of going off and running for 8 miles, right? Because that's not good, like for your general health and for your long-term stuff. So all the components that you talk about in terms of like sleep, sleep quality, length of sleep, nutritional stuff, you know, kind of like some of our members have CGMs. So we're careful to know that we only want the data that helps the end user, right? Like, so one, that's something that they have, but two, where we have an expertise in, like, you know, where if we don't know how to use the data, there is no point of wanting or needing or seeing that data because we might not be able to take advantage of it. But if we have an understanding of the nutrition, sleep, other activities that they have done, so that we can provide the right recommendations, that is how we are thinking about it. It also allows our coaches who work with our clients to be able to see that data. Like, so as an example, if you're a coach who is training someone for like a half marathon, one of the core principles is to get their client to be in a particular heart zone, right? Like, you want to get them to be in a particular heart zone. And today, that particular process is not as easy because you have the client running on a treadmill, and unless the coach is like looking at the watch to the side or something else, you're just guessing as to, you know, this person is panting, they're sweating profusely, so they must be in their zone. But some people's heart rate is different than their sweat rate. So how do we take advantage of the live streaming of data to help our coaches provide, you know, kind of real-time feedback and corrections and guidance to our clients, as well as how do we get a better understanding of what the member has done outside the club so that our coaching and recommendations are more on point and more accurate so that they can help our, you know, kind of members achieve their goals better. So those are the discussions, and our general roadmap involves using Terra to be able to get some of the data to complete our data map for our users.
Super. So it's all about understanding the person 24/7 in order to be able to help them achieve their goals in the best way possible. Something that I've seen that you're doing in a very interesting way, and there's so many solutions out there trying to fully replace the coach and the coaching experience and so on. Whereas from my impression about Equinox is that it's a symbiotic relationship that you have the coach that is really helping and then the technology that is replacing some of the aspects. What's your take on that? And maybe, like, do you see a world that technology is going to be the only part, or do you see a part of coaches playing an important role in the future?
I think you mentioned it right, which is it's symbiotic, but it's also not binary, right? You could have multiple stages in your journey where there are certain times you embrace needing a coach, because definitely I can, you know, argue till the cows come home that you get better results when there is a human being, right? Even with the best AI generated program and everything else, there are certain things we've not yet reached the stage where if I come in the morning, I train in New Jersey at 5 o'clock in the morning, and my coach Lisa can tell the way I walk immediately how I'm feeling and what she needs to change with my thing. Or if I'm slightly tweaking my shoulder, then she, you know, kind of like makes certain recommendations, and she pushes me and pushes me and pushes me so that I get the best out of the 1 hour, right? So whereas even with the, if we were to say Lisa was just sitting in a room and, you know, it's like one of those drone pilots, she could see me, but her communication was only through text and visuals on my app. Even then, that pushing and motivation is something that I have to self-generate. And while some individuals are capable of it, some of us are not, right? So for me, that makes that particular component irreplaceable. The technology is definitely helpful for them to be able to have a better grasp of what the client is doing, client has done, you know, last night, to your point that we were discussing before. It also helps the tracking that I was mentioning, so that you can actually track the metrics and, you know, have better ways of providing the coaching. It also helps, and it's something that now is available in our app, is even the best clients, like, only meet with their trainers 3 times a week, right? And most of us want to be active all 7 days. So what should we be doing on the days that we don't meet the trainer? You know, either whether it's in an Equinox or in your home. So now we have that full 7-day programming to be able to help our clients know what to do when they're with their coach, know what to do when they're not with the coach. But we do have, to the point that you made earlier, programs that can be done by a user, right? Like, they can just basically open up the app, and for the next 1 hour, they can go through the videos, they can go through the moves, they can ask for help and do it. And if there are times where that might be helpful for someone who's like an athlete or someone who generally knows what they're doing, and they give very specific constraints, and we've gotten very good with being able to tell, if I want to improve on X, but I've had a shoulder surgery, our programming does take into account those corrective movements and can give you exercises that are good for someone with a shoulder surgery, right? So we've advanced in that, and I think that's an area we'll continue to invest in, so that we can have not just the expertise of our coaches, but also where the LLMs and AI can help generate the best programs. And they suit a certain member base. But I think most members, we still believe, will get the best results from having a coach who has the best technology with them to be able to assist and provide the best results. But we also want to have the other offering for those, you know, for various reasons, might choose that. So we think of that as like a continuum, where you're going from kind of just a non-coach-led program to a coach-led program to a program where you might actually have 2 to 3 coaches, where you might have 2 days a week, a movement coach, and a third day a nutrition coach, right? We have the expertise in all areas, and we want to, you know, kind of like embrace that so that we can optimize your health to its fullest.
Super. It's where I believe you built as the chief technology officer of the company, one of the best engineering arms in this space. In terms of company culture or maybe engineering culture? Like, how is the team operating today? What are your, maybe the values that you are looking for, and how, what's the team looking like?
I think we embrace very firmly, you know, kind of it's, I don't like to use cliches, but this one, I think I will, like, servant leadership, where no one is above or below doing any other task. And, like, you know, we all get into it. The values that the team has out of collaboration, you know, kind of like being able to have good communication and so on. And I think many of us have been here for a while. We were here during COVID and there was a lot of uncertainty. And I think sometimes surviving that period of uncertainty and turmoil helps the bonds get better. So there's like a lot of camaraderie in our team. We embrace that, you know, kind of like there's always going to be interesting and challenging projects. There is going to be small fires that need to be fixed, long-term initiatives, so that engineers are empowered to bring new ideas. I think, as I mentioned, even with the product chapter, right, I am someone who believes that I learn from people who come into the organization. I do not have the answers. I don't have all the, you know, ideas in the world, especially when new people come and they go, hey, here is something cool we did in the previous company. We fully embrace it and go, how do we incorporate that into our culture? So engineers are empowered. Engineers are valued. Engineers are appreciated. And I think we've also done a good job of making sure that, well, if you divided the entire technology organization only into product and engineers, which is, you can almost do that, then at least in some places, what I did not like was the engineers did not have the full grasp of why we are doing something, right? It becomes like, well, there was a story, so we're doing it. And I think in our organization in the last 5-6 years, we've embraced the rule that whether you're a tester, an engineer, a designer, or a product manager, if we ask these three questions, why are we doing this particular story? Why are we not doing that particular story? And how are you going to measure the effectiveness of what you did? We should, all of you should have the answer so that they have the context. And being that, you know, we work in a company where you can experience our product 20 feet away from where we work, we're able to be the end users also, where we can experience both the good and the bad of the services that we build. So working out, using our apps helps us come up with the pain points that our customers are feeling to be able to kind of correct them. So it makes the engineering team, you know, kind of like very clear on the value they're providing to the business, which is something that's lost in a much larger company, right? Like, so when I'm, one of my lines when I'm telling people why it is good to join Equinox, I tell, you know, if you're working at like a Facebook or a Google, can you tell your parents, hey, look, here is the feature that I developed, you know, there. Like, you know, nothing wrong, but we are a smaller company, which means that you have the advantage of being able to work on a singular feature and being able to show to your family and friends and say, this is something that I built, and that's not available in, you know, many other companies.
Super. You mentioned collaboration. I wanted to ask you, like, if we go more specific, if you're testing for collaboration in an interview, how do you find it?
One of the, you know, kind of simple things is, when we ask about a project, or when I ask about a project and I go, yeah, how did you do? I tend to pick up on whether they use we or I, right? When they're talking about a particular project, you know, kind of like if they say something like, then I went there and I talked to the CEO and I went into this, I presented this, I did this. It's not a big disqualifier, but it helps me understand how the user is kind of like thinking about it, right? Then, you know, similarly, when you ask about what was some of the problems that you had or challenges that you faced or one of the biggest hot fixes or whatever else, do they then actually switch to the I mode? Because I would prefer when you're praising something, you use the plural and you talk about the team. And then when you're talking about a mistake, I think, you know, good individuals basically raise their hand and tell, you know, I did this mistake, I learned from it. They switch from the we to the I. So those are, you know, they're not always right, but sometimes those help me kind of like understand the user's perspective. And some of it is just their articulation, right? I'm answering it very specifically. If I was judging someone on a 30-minute interview, you know, kind of what are the cues that I would look for, not like during our normal work, those would be around, you know, kind of like when they talk about it, how do they explain things? How do they talk about the context? Do they, you know, kind of like one of the best lines is, I think I like this from To Kill a Mockingbird, which is where Atticus Finch says something like, unless you walked in the shoes of someone else, you do not know how they feel, right? Like, so when they go, I don't know why the tester can't test it, you know? Yeah, but you probably do not know what responsibilities they had, what were the challenges that they faced, and so on. So there's a certain level of empathy, I think, that has to be recognized for them to be able to collaborate. Collaboration also requires communication, because sometimes you clearly cannot help someone because you have your deadlines and you need to do this, right? And there are different ways of explaining it. If you explain and tell, look, I have a 5 p.m. deadline, can I perhaps answer your question, you know, after that? That's very different from someone who basically goes, you know, like, not now, right? And both of them are coming from the same intention, but the delivery mechanism and the communication in one case makes collaboration possible, in another case, not possible. So it's communication, cues, empathy, the idea of, you know, kind of like where you stand in front of a team and how do you put yourself either up or down, depending on achievement or when something wrong. Those are the what I would look for during an interview.
Hmm. Very interesting. This is a very nuanced understanding from the way that people convey information. That's super, super interesting. Something else that you mentioned from the beginning, that you join as one person and the team with 10 people and 50 people and so on. What have you learned there in terms of scaling teams? What's the dynamic there? And what's the best way of managing and the difference between the team growing and how does your management style change over time?
Yeah, I think here probably I do have, you know, like more to learn in this particular phase, right? Like right now, I'm a EVP and, you know, which is in our general scale, like an E9, and I have people who are like an E1, right? Like joining as like a junior analyst or something else. Because it's a smallish team, I think, you know, we generally, in terms of like me getting to know everyone, I know everyone. I think, you know, for me, till the team gets much bigger, like that's my general management style, is that I not only know people, I know their families, I know about their kids, I know about their movies or books or whatever else. Just I make it a point to learn those things. But obviously, the management structure is somewhere, you know, I have one-on-ones with my directs and I have monthlies with my skips. That's just kind of like, you know, how we like to kind of organize. And we tend to have an open door, but I would ask if they've communicated this to their manager, right? Like you want to kind of always ask, you know, that. In terms of scaling teams, we've never had, hey, we need to add 20 or 30 people at the same time. If we had a project of that nature, my preference is to add consultants or contractors during that time than to just bring people there, because we've not had enough time to establish the bonds that are needed for the team chemistry to kind of come, right? Because we typically, you know, look for values of, if we have, say, 3 or 4 extremely detail-oriented engineers, then I might actually look for someone who is a little bit more of like a risk taker, right? Who is a little bit more of X, because you want to have balanced teams. So it's similar to assembling like a baseball or a football team. You have to have the diversity in terms of the characteristics to assemble a good squad. So not only do we look for it when we're hiring, but also when we're assembling a product squad, you're kind of going with, here's somebody who will jump in and hack and fix it, but here is somebody who will actually look at the architecture 3 or 4 times to make sure that this will scale. Here is someone who will do this. So having that qualitative rubric of what are the qualities that we have in our teams, and, you know, then when we're looking for a new person, what should they be high in and what should they be medium in and what should they be low in. So it's that type of little bit more accurate gradation of those qualitative attributes along with the basic technical stuff, right? So that's how we've slowly and carefully kind of like added our team members. And that speaks to kind of like, you know, in technology, we have the greatest retention among all departments at Equinox. And part of it is that, you know, the team members are very involved in hiring process, but we also make sure that for the first 1 month, the onboarding and everything else is done carefully so that they feel they've understood it and then they're able to contribute. Because one thing that is often frustrating for new people is that if they feel that it's just overwhelming for them and they don't contribute as many story points as others, they also feel disillusioned. So how do we help make sure that not only during the interview process, but during the onboarding, we make it easy for them to feel a sense of achievement and accomplishment?
If we look a bit into the future now and we say in 5 years, here's the achievements that the company is going to have, what would you say? What is the focus for the future?
I think it's, you know, taking what we've done in the space of movement and transcending to beyond movement, right? Like we've always kind of had our goal as high performance lifestyle. High performance lifestyle is, you know, kind of like, and, you know, we had this actually pre-COVID, helping our members, like say, scale Mount Kilimanjaro or go on Sahara deserts with a coach who gives you training, but then also travels, helping you have the best age, right? I think, you know, we're all familiar with the concept of your physical age and what your real age is, and how do you make sure that you're aging in the right way so that you're able to live a healthier life, not necessarily longer, but a healthier life as you get older. How do we make sure that the mental health is something that people have access to be able to kind of like really balance their mental health along with physical health? You know, with all the fads around nutrition, what are the best ways to kind of like help people eat better? So taking the similar science where, you know, I think we have expertise in other areas, but we do not actually have as many services in those areas. I think that would be something that in the next 5 years, we would definitely have more offerings in those areas that we currently do not.
For my last question, if we go 100 years into the future, and we look backwards, what do you think we're going to say that those were really bad ideas when it comes to maybe engineering or gym experiences or studios or something along those lines about bad decisions, and our ancestors maybe are going to be saying those were really bad ideas?
I think I'll be biased, but I'll go with Web3 as one of the probably, you know, baddest ideas in the last 10, 20 years, right? I think I could be proven wrong. I was at South By just this week, and, you know, a lot of spatial computing and AI, no Web3 or crypto things. It's that definitely is, you know, more in the, I generally sense in the area of spatial and, you know, kind of cross reality, there is some component of virtualization so that you can see yourself there. But where we're all creating virtual cities and go off as virtual avatars and do that stuff, you know, kind of probably I could be proven wrong. But since you asked me to take a guess, I'm going to say that would be considered an idea that did not pan out.
Super. Ishwar, thank you so much for the call. It's been a phenomenal podcast. Thank you.
Thank you so much. All right.